Care Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Let's get some reaction then as Simon Harris addressed the Fine Gael Ardesh at the weekend in his first speech as party leader. Shortly we'll hear from political correspondent with the Irish Independent, John Downing. But first of all, some snippets and clips of Simon Harris's speech the other day. Have a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight I promise you this, we're going to hit the ground running. We will build 250,000 homes together over the next 5 years. Under my leadership, we'll build more student accommodation, including here in this city of Galway, and we'll kickstart that with an additional 1,200 student beds in Dublin. Under my leadership, I look at practical supports to help the farming community, because agriculture is a vital part of the Irish economy. This year, the focus must be on improving access, opening more beds, more operating theatres, and ensuring we train and recruit more GPs, more consultants, more nurses, more therapists than ever before. We stand for more Gardaí, with more powers and more resources to make our streets safe. We'll also, friends, do more to support and resource our defence forces, the only Óglaig na hÉireann. But we have to better manage migration. We need a fair and a firm system. We cannot work in isolation. We need to work with our EU partners to plan better. Irish people want to play their part. Irish people want to help. They already are. And Ireland stands shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine because we know war is a darkness that threatens all of our democracies and all of our European values. Prime Minister Netanyahu, let me say this to you this evening. The Irish people could not be clearer. We are repulsed by your actions. Cease fire now and let the aid flow safely.
Simon Harris addressing the Fine Gael Ardesh at the weekend. Political correspondent with the Irish Independent, John Downing, is with us. John, your assessment of that speech at the weekend. Simon Harris, obviously, you know, very upbeat and up-tempo, as you'd expect, promising the sun, moon and stars and hitting all of those key words. I think he nearly addressed every person in the country or every cohort in the country, obviously appealing to a lot of people.
That's right, Owen. I counted seven kind of major themes: housing, farming, climate change, taxation, especially moving to do more to get more lower paid people on the lower rate of tax, health, the usual one, the old Fine Gael happy theme of law and order, and migration, as you just heard him there. The housing, a quarter of a million houses over 5 years. Well, he only has about 10, 11 months left anyway. So we'll wait to parse that one. He says it won't be 50,000 houses per year, as in it's going to be slow ramp up, and more than, presumably more than 50,000 per year in the latter years of this sort of five-year programme. But as I say, well, chances of him being Taoiseach the other side of a general election are slight at the moment. We're on 30-plus thousand houses at the moment. Capacity, shortage of skills, the sluggish planning system, all sorts of and supply chain problems with things like cement and timber and energy and all the rest. It's hard to see this one.
It is, and Leo Varadkar obviously has his last engagement as Taoiseach today. It's expected that Simon Harris will become Taoiseach tomorrow, barring, you know, a massive U-turn from some of the independents that have promised their support and some other TDs going against the party whip. So Simon Harris will be Taoiseach from tomorrow. What do you think is his biggest challenge in the last 10 months of this government, John?
I think his biggest challenge is to put some flesh on the bones. You were saying there was a huge amount to talk about new energy, enthusiasm, action, vision, values. Bit short on any kind of substance or detail. Voters are very sceptical at the moment. An opinion poll yesterday in the Sunday Independent was quite interesting. We may be heading into a very, very strange situation after the next general election. So you can't really write off Simon Harris. I think voters are sceptical. They want to hear something. They need convincing that government performance can improve in delivering for ordinary people between now and the general election. But basically, if you listen to Simon Harris and take him at a full face value, we're talking about an election next March, that he'll run it right down to the latest possible date. On the other hand, there is a window after the budget in the autumn before the hour goes back at the end of October. I still wouldn't rule that out. But time is, any way you look at it, is very much against him. And we've seen people, for example, tomorrow there's much speculation about who he'll put on his team and all of that. The likes of you and me are interested in that kind of stuff. But ordinary citizens really don't care too much about it. What they need to see is more substantial improvements, particularly in things like health and housing.
Yeah, and this so-called cabinet reshuffle that might be coming down the line, I know Philip Ryan and Fiona Sheehan writing in The Independent today are saying that Jennifer Carroll McNeill, Patrick O'Donovan and Hildegard Nocton are all locked in a cabinet reshuffle race. Talks that Helen McEntee might be taken away from the Justice portfolio. The question is, though, John, is there much point in doing that when there's only 10 or 11 months left of this government? Or, on the other side, if they do that, might it give the government a new lease of life looking ahead to the general election?
It has the potential. I mean, what was interesting in that survey yesterday is that Sinn Féin appear stalled and appear to be going backwards. And the drift of action is going to independence of one kind or another. And it's notable that the independents are occupying space. There is a sort of anti-migrant or critical of migration policy and management at the moment, and seeking more controls and more hardline measures. So yes, something in justice, particularly following the riots last November in Dublin, something in justice could, while it is a risky strategy, could have an impact in the public mind. There are risks attaching to it.
What's your overall assessment of what's happening within Fine Gael? We had Jennifer Carroll McNeill in studio here on Friday morning. We've had Martin Hayden on previously and a couple of other Fine Gael TDs. And obviously, you know, they're towing the party line and saying, oh sure, you know, it's a time of renewal. Every party goes through this, etc. Others would say, particularly in opposition, the government is limping towards the finish line here, particularly Fine Gael, with, what, 12 or 13 TDs saying now that they won't be running in the next general election. What's your assessment? Renewal or limping?
I fear they're limping. We're talking about a dozen who said they're going. You won't see Simon Coveney standing again. He's announced. He sort of jumped from cabinet before he was pushed. You won't see Leo Varadkar standing again. So there's a procession of people, an inordinately large procession of heavy hitters heading for the exits. Some of it is generational, I'll agree with that. Our neighbour down here in Laois, Charlie Flanagan, has punched in his time, and he's of an age when he wants to take things a bit easier, I would say. But others probably would have stayed under different circumstances. So it is on a very dangerous corner at the moment. And in actual fact, Simon Harris maybe called upon to give it some kind of resuscitation or life-saving.
Okay, and finally then, John, I was reading another piece online that says another challenge that Simon Harris would have now within Fine Gael is to redefine the party within the coalition. And this is something we'll see close to the general election, as we always do. You know, when these parties are elected, they're united. One team, we're one government working together. As an election comes closer and closer, then it's, oh sure, we're our own party. We have our own views, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, etc. So that's another challenge.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, in fairness to the current government, they have been, while they started very badly in the summer and autumn of 2020, their first weeks in they were pretty calamitous and lots of unforced errors, but it has settled down. We've had pretty much the same team around the cabinet table since late June 2020, the greater part of 4 years. And you are right, we are now going to see divergence, because there will be an element of each of the three parties in the coalition foraging for themselves, trying to reclaim their distinct identity, and they will be competing with one another. So that is another tension in government, and by definition, the Taoiseach is the person who should be able to try and manage those tensions and keep things going, if he is determined to go right to the end.
Okay, we'll leave it there. John Downing, thanks as always for your time this morning. Political correspondent with the Irish Independent, assessing their Simon Harris's speech at the Fine Gael Ardèche over the weekend, and also the fact that he more than likely will be declared Taoiseach by tomorrow evening. A few of the messages then that are coming in to us, and Liam out on the Curra says, all Simon Harris was short of singing was more and more and more by Joe Dolan. Tongue in cheek there, Liam, thanks for that message. Jack in Castle Dermot texting in as well to say Simon Harris can promise 100,000 houses in the next 5 years, but Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens will be hammered in the next election, according to Jack. And Joe has texted in to say, I think we've heard all of this before, what Simon Harris has said. And May texting in with similar views there, saying that we've heard all of this before, and we're not going to believe a word that Simon Harris has said. James says, good morning. Moving the current minister from justice may be a token gesture, but something needs to change. This minister is distracted by woke politics and has neglected basic bread and butter policing, which we can all see through the road deaths and lack of Garda officers on the street. And that comes in from James. Keep those messages coming in. We're going to go to local issues now, up around the Maynooth area with Labour councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Angela Feeney. Good morning to you, Angela.
Morning, Owen. Morning, listeners.
Local issues that you raised with the council, Angela. You wanted them to write to Waterways Ireland requesting remedial maintenance works to be carried out on the paths at Maynooth Harbour.
That's right, Owen. The area in particular around the Maynooth Harbour is in a dreadful state. You know, it's often bad with the odd puddle here and there, but it's particularly bad for some time now, and it's riddled with them and really needs attention. And lots of residents who use the Greenway have been in touch with me about it, including people who use wheelchairs or buggies. You know, it's a lovely amenity, but it needs attention. And as I said at Friday's meeting, I logged the issue many times on Waterways Ireland's own logging system on their website, but I had no acknowledgement, no response. So that's why I brought the motion to the council, asking for a letter to be issued requesting the repairs to be carried out. And there was also mentioned during COVID, Owen, of improved signage along the Greenway, you know, regarding, you know, cyclists and, you know, walkers, shared spaces. But it would be good to know where that's at. But I also asked the council to ask why we don't get responses when we log an issue as public representatives. So I'm happy to say that the motion was passed with full support from the members, and the letter will issue from us all as a collective, and hopefully we'll get action on this very soon.
Let's stay in Maynooth, Angela. And we had you on the programme when the president of Maynooth University announced that talks were ongoing between the college and Kildare County Council with the possibility of reopening the pool for general use. Any update on that?
Yeah, good news on that one, Owen. Keeping it on the agenda, I am, because it's good to hear from the response to my question at the meeting on Friday that the council is currently in discussions with Maynooth University and St Patrick's, and indeed Swim Ireland, to, you know, make sure that the swimming facility is delivered for the town. And you might remember that when the Maynooth University president addressed council some weeks back, I suggested this in my own question to her, asking about refurbishing and updating the college pool. Because, you know, we live in a time of recycle, reuse, and this project makes great sense for all. So I'm delighted to hear the response from the council meeting on Friday that this is ongoing and it's moving along at a pace.
OK, another question that you brought forward. You wanted the council to provide information on the number of creches that have been provided in new developments in the municipal district in the last 5 years.
Yeah, not as happy with the report for this question, to be honest, Owen, because the question I asked, if you read the question, essentially was asking, you know, for how many creches were actually delivered. And that wasn't answered in the report. The report talks about how many were permitted. It also said about the fact that the council can't do site visits. Well, if I do a walk around Maynooth today, I can do the site visits myself in each of the estates. Look, the report only serves to highlight the flaw that exists in my mind, not at local authority level, but nationally at planning level. And, you know, and the flaw is this, that, you know, at the start of the planning process, we require a childcare facility to be included in large housing development, their planning applications. But at the end of the process, we don't close that loop when an estate is completed to see if the creche has actually been delivered. And, you know, I'm meeting families all the time. It's so frustrating for so many families who can't access childcare in their own locality. You know, they have to make career choices, you know, about reducing hours or delaying returning to work. It's a real problem and it needs to be addressed at national level because, in my view, the current model isn't delivering what it was intended to deliver for families. And it's a huge issue. So I'll keep pushing it and I'll keep pushing for change.
All right. Just finally then, Angela, I want to go out to Donaghadee, and I was only talking about this over the weekend to somebody from that area who said that the speed limit in that area are too high and cars are driving so, so fast, particularly in the vicinity of Tiernanogue Montessori School.
Yeah, and you know, Owen, I've been on about the fact that we need the traffic review of the speed limits to be completed, and that's ongoing. But while we're waiting for that, we can't obviously put the safety of children at risk. And I met the owner of the creche on site a while back and I saw firsthand the state of the road, but also the speeding. And if you combine the two, it's just a hazard. And needless to say, she's concerned, the parents are concerned for the safety of the children. So I was very happy at the meeting that the area engineer has agreed to meet me on the site to see what traffic calming measures can be put in place in the interim, you know, whether it's better signage, warning to slow down because there are children in the area.
That's Labour Councillor on the Claymaynooth Municipal District, Angela Feeney. Thanks for that, Angela, and good morning. Just have another message in from a listener that says, whoever wrote that speech for Simon Harris is very good because all it is words. And that comes in from a listener. Okay, after the break, we're going to be telling you about six Irish native plants that you may never see again. Stay with us.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, research has found that the nettle-leaved bellflower and other native plants are at risk due to climate change. Research was carried out by University College Cork, and one of those lecturers is Dr. Paul Holloway, lecturer in geography and ecology at UCC. Paul, welcome to the programme again. We talk about terms and we hear terms such as biodiversity loss and the biodiversity crisis. What exactly do those terms mean?
Hi, Owen. Yeah, so biodiversity really means the array or the diversity of different species and different ecosystems that we have on the planet and in our country. And so biodiversity loss and the crisis is really representing the kind of how we're slowly losing different species, different organisms, and the lack thereof of diversity when we're talking about kind of the overall ecosystems.
So the reason that you carried out this research then to see how climate change might impact some of those most vulnerable plants and species, is that right?
Yes, it is, yes. So we modelled 13 of the most vulnerable species of plants here in Ireland and found that six of them were at risk of extinction in the next 50 years based on climate.
And which six are those?
You've caught me there. I know the nettle leaf bellflower is one, obviously, as you alluded to. I don't have the full list to hand, and I would have, I think the scientist in me would have been looking at the Latin names. So
right. I won't ask you to read the Latin names anyway, because we wouldn't understand them. But yeah, the nettle-leaved bellflower, the Mackie's heat, the wood crane's bill, the alpine butterwort, the subterranean clover, and the spring vetch, apparently, are the six that are going to be damaged. And how quickly could these plants become extinct then, Paul?
So we use climate change projections up until 2070, so 50 years' time. But obviously there's nothing to say that it might not happen beforehand. Obviously we can look at how our climate's doing and model that into the future. And obviously where we're currently seeing those plants, you have a specific range of temperature, a specific precipitation level. And what we're seeing is that's going to change, that we won't have particularly many hospitable locations based on where they're currently found in that period.
Another thing that might damage those plants are animals and species that live off the plants. And I know there's been a lot of talk about the amount of deer that we have here in Ireland. Do you think that could have an impact?
Yeah, well, that was one of the real starting points of the research, was not just to model how plants are going to change under climate shifts, but also to see whether deer are also going to track those changes. So if we've got a loss in area for certain plant species, that's bad. But if the areas where they're existing in the future are also overlain with areas of herbivores, then that's going to cause issues as well. And so what we modelled the four main deer species that are currently found in Ireland, and we did find an increase in the overall range for sika deer. But largely speaking, most of the plants that weren't projected to go extinct, they were largely shifting into areas where deer tend to avoid, like urban areas.
And what happens if those plants become extinct then in the next 50 years, as you've projected?
It's a tricky question to answer, because really we just don't know. There's so much about the natural world that's entwined and linked together. And so if one species goes extinct in a region or globally, it automatically shifts the pressure onto other species. So therefore, a species that might be doing well at the moment is all of a sudden being grazed by other herbivores like deer, because there's less different species to go around. And so ultimately, it kind of throws the balance of those ecosystems out a little bit. And really, it's very difficult to kind of say exactly what will happen. But when we've got maybe one or two species that are thriving in an area at the expense of others that aren't, that have undergone biodiversity loss, we've got less species in the area, it puts them under less pressure. And then subsequently, when you've only got very kind of monocultural ecosystems, that's where the potential for, say, disease or extreme climate events can really, really cause catastrophic outcomes.
Is there anything that we as people can do? Is it too simplistic to say go out and plant more of these native species so that they don't go extinct?
I think that's got to be the prime outcome of this research. We found that urban areas are a real success, a real hotspot for many of these plant species, and partly that's due to the testament of how people are responding to this biodiversity crisis. We see these urban wildflower meadows kind of rewilding at a small scale of gardens. And ultimately, by using native plant mixes as opposed to other wildflowers that may look pretty but aren't necessarily native, it provides a more of a base for them to survive at this point. So instead of starting from a relatively small area and experiencing climate change, by planting them further afield and in different areas, particularly native plants, it's given them more of a grounding to be able to combat it and do all of that. Yeah.
And obviously then, finally, Paul, the knock-on effect that, these native species have, it's not just a case of driving past fields and say, oh, these look lovely and nice and pretty, but they have, a huge benefit for pollinators, for birds, for other species out there.
They do, yeah. And there's some really interesting research that's out there that shows that you take one one species out of the ecosystem, it can generally collapse. And so often we think of that in terms of the top-down predators, but it's just equally important at the bottom-up. And you talk about pollinators there. They're vitally key for many of our migrating birds that are starting to arrive in Ireland over the last couple of weeks. They're vitally important for our food systems and subsequently just making sure we have healthy ecosystems.
Lecturer in Geographic Information Systems and Spatial Ecology at University College Cork, Dr. Paul Holloway. Thanks for your time this morning, Paul. And a reminder of those six plants that are vulnerable of going extinct. We have the nettle-leaved bellflower, the McKay's heath, Wood's cranesbill, alpine butterwort, subterranean clover and the spring vetch. And thanks again to Paul for joining us. You can read more on the University College Cork website. Just before we go to news, there's an update on what's happening in Gaza. Israeli leaders are preparing for military operations in Gaza's southern city of Rafah, where most of the Palestinian territory's population has fled after 6 months of fighting. Talks in Cairo aimed at brokering a truce have made, in quotes, significant progress, with more negotiations expected in the coming days. That's according to Al-Kahira, who's the Egyptian state-linked outlet. International pressure has mounted on Israel to bring an end to the war, with its main ally, the United States, last week demanding a ceasefire and hostage release deal, along with ramped-up aid deliveries. Israel pulled its forces out of southern Gaza yesterday, but Israel's defence minister, Yoav Gallant, said troops had left the city of Khan Yunis to prepare for future missions, including in Rafah. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel was, in quotes, one step away from victory after troops left areas in and around the largely destroyed Khan Yunis. A stream of displaced Palestinians walked there, hoping to return to their homes from temporary shelters in Rafah, a little further south. As we know, the war erupted after the 7th of October attack against Israel by Hamas militants that resulted in the deaths of 1,100 people, mostly civilians. Hamas and Islamic Jihad militants also took more than 250 Israeli and foreign hostages, 129 of whom remain in Gaza, including 34, the army says, are dead. Israel's retaliatory offensive has killed at least 33,000 people in Gaza, mostly women and children, according to the health ministry in the Hamas-run territory. And those talks in Cairo in Egypt, we're told, are going to continue.